What if I told you that you can support your blood pressure and healthy CoQ10 levels with two chews a day? The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. That's like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 supports your cardiovascular health. Visit RadioBeats.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply on bundles and save 15% with the promo code DEAL.
I'm so sorry about the chaos today. So I'm trying to find a kind of quietish place. Can you guys hear me okay?
Claire Parker is the Cairo bureau chief for The Washington Post. And she was speaking to me from a rest stop about 25 miles outside of Marrakesh.
And we just got back here after a long day of driving up through the mountains where we saw some of the worst destruction that we've seen since we arrived early yesterday morning.
Last Friday, an earthquake hit Morocco that leveled whole communities and left at least 2,900 people dead. This is the worst earthquake Morocco has seen in more than a century. The death toll is only rising, and the full scale of the devastation is just starting to come into view. Claire and her colleagues spent Monday talking to people in some of the hardest hit villages in the High Atlas Mountains.
We're just seeing houses completely flattened, buildings where, you know, there's just the front of a building and all of the back of it has fallen off of a cliff. We've seen destroyed schools, destroyed mosques, basically decimated cities where the survivors are camped, not in proper tents, but just in makeshift tents that they've kind of rigged up with blankets, with tarps and string or sticks. It's really hot during the day here, and so they're sitting out kind of in the baking heat. There's no running water, there's no toilets, and then at night it gets really cold.
And many of these people are still waiting for help to come. From the newsroom of The Washington Post, this is Post Reports. I'm Elahe Izadi. It's Tuesday, September 12th. Today, Claire tells us what's happening on the ground in Morocco. The government has mobilized the army and sent thousands of doctors and nurses, but basic necessities are still hard to come by. And there are big questions about what the future holds. Claire, can you orient us as to where exactly you are in Morocco and where all of this has taken place?
So I'm south of Marrakesh, which is kind of in south central Morocco. And these are the Atlas mountain range, very tall peaks, very remote countryside. The kind of city, bustling city, quickly gives way to small villages and then smaller villages and then tiny hamlets that are just kind of perched up in the mountains. And some of these are not even accessible by car. And so, for example, we passed a village today. We were driving on this kind of winding mountain road, you know, with a cliff on one side and a mountain with small rocks sort of trickling down on the other. And down below, we could see there was a path leading up to a collection of houses that were perched on this hill, but it wasn't wide enough for a car. And so we saw men loading supplies onto the back of a donkey to bring up to this village. And so this is how remote this region is. It's quite high altitude. It gets very cold at night, even in the summer. It's very hot during the day and very dry. The soil, the earth is kind of very crumbly already. And so I think that's part of why this earthquake was so bad here and why the impact was so bad. Partly the isolation in terms of sort of ability for aid to reach the victims and the survivors, but also in these villages where we went, and especially farther up in the mountains. So in El Bour, which is in the Wirgan region, and then in the most devastated place that we've seen since we arrived, called Tlet and Yacoub, the houses are constructed of clay bricks, basically, and wood, just really unstable, not sturdy materials. And so they just were completely flattened.
So Claire, can you tell us a little bit more about some of the conversations you've been having with people on the ground and more about what you've seen on, you know, just a few days after this earthquake?
So a lot of the conversations we've been having with people were people who were out in open fields, dirt fields. Houses had completely crumbled. It wasn't safe to go back. But they had kind of ventured back to just grab a few supplies, grab some pots and pans, a tea kettle, some blankets to set up these makeshift shelters for themselves. And what we heard again and again was that government aid has been very slow to arrive, if at all. A lot of the sort of food, water, basic essentials that people have received have come from local associations and individual donors. Some of that aid had begun to materialize on Monday, but this was 3 days after the quake.
Yeah. And what are the most immediate needs of people? What are people telling you and their most pressing concerns in the aftermath of this earthquake?
What we're hearing is that people, first of all, really need shelter. There are some kind of these official camps that we've seen set up here in Uzni, for example, and in Tilat and Yakub, actually. But mostly, as I said, people are kind of sleeping out in the open. And on Sunday, I met a couple who had lost both of their children in the earthquake and their home completely destroyed. And the woman was injured. She showed me bruises on her abdomen and her arms. Her husband had a bad knee after a piece of debris fell on his knee, and he was kind of hobbling on a cane, and they had nowhere to sleep. And they were just asking, please, can we have a place to sleep? And so that's the most immediate need. And then also really basics like food and medicines. We keep hearing people need medicines too. So food, medicines, shelter is what we're hearing.
And have the search and rescue efforts, are those still ongoing several days after the earthquake?
So the search and rescue efforts were very slow to get started. And really what we've been hearing and what reporting elsewhere in the country has revealed is that, you know, in the immediate aftermath of the quake, in many, many of these villages, it was just villagers digging with their bare hands through the rubble. And the couple that I met yesterday, it was the man and some neighbors who were digging with their bare hands through the rubble of the house to first pull out his wife and then to find the bodies of his children and bury them. There are search and rescue operations ongoing. At this point, what we heard today from one of the Moroccan official rescuers is that it's essentially a recovery operation. There's no hope of finding people alive. And I think that faded pretty fast after the quake. It's quite different from, for example, the earthquake in Syria and Turkey earlier this year when people were still pulling out survivors days later. I think partly because of just how poorly constructed these buildings are. What we saw today, we saw a really harrowing scene in Abur, which is a tiny village. And we watched while we were there, the rescuers standing. There was an excavator machine, and then they were using shovels in their hands to kind of pull back the debris from a house that had completely collapsed. And then we pretty quickly realized that in this clearing right by where they were working, there was a woman who was wailing, and other women were comforting her. And the rescuers were searching for the body of her 7-year-old son, who was buried under the rubble. And this woman, her name is Habiba. All of her family members who had lived there in that house were killed. She was the only survivor. These were her parents, her husband, her two brothers and their wives. And then they had all been extracted and buried. And the only one left was her son, Badr, who's 7. And while we were there, the rescuers were able to move the debris, to extract his body, to put it on a stretcher and cover it in a blanket and bring it to a nearby building to be washed according to Muslim ritual. And then very quickly after sort of a final prayer, taken to the cemetery.
Yeah, I mean, this is just so horrific. And for these survivors, there are the immediate needs that they have to just take care of remaining alive, you know, food and shelter. But I can't help at this moment also think of the long-term impacts this kind of mass trauma is going to have on people who've lost not only their homes, but so many members of their families.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to comprehend. And I think so many of the people that we met were just really still in shock, trying to kind of grasp the enormity of that. But it's very unclear, I mean, what the timeline will be for rebuilding these villages, whether they will be rebuilt. These are whole communities just wiped out, mountain communities. So on Monday, the government said that the prime minister had held an emergency meeting in the capital, Rabat, and he'd promised that the government would continue with relief efforts and provide support to survivors and some level of compensation and reconstruction. And this is sort of a plan in conjunction with the palace, the king. But it wasn't clear really what the time frame for that is and sort of what that would actually look like. So I think we're waiting to see in the days and weeks ahead if more details emerge on that front.
After the break, gaps in the government's response and what ordinary Moroccans are doing about it. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
So, Claire, you've shared already a little bit as to how the Moroccan government is responding to this crisis. Can you tell me a little bit more about what they're doing on the ground and how are people on the ground feeling about the government response?
I think overall, we've heard a lot of expressions of feeling rather abandoned or that they hadn't received aid, basic relief items, but also that sometimes we heard some accounts of ambulances passing people, injured people by on the road who are trying to flag them down for help. Or we heard people tell us that no government rescuers, no rescuers who were formally trained in that kind of work of any kind had arrived. And it was simply villagers digging people out of the rubble themselves. And so I think there's a lot of anger. We came across a scene of a bunch of basically angry, very angry residents, men in the area, shouting at one army officer who was standing there, saying this is chaos, what's going on. So I think that will be something that lingers in the period ahead.
Mm-hmm. And what about aid from other countries? What are you seeing, and how is the Moroccan government interacting with foreign governments that have offered to help in this moment?
So they've permitted some governments to send aid or rescuers. There's a Spanish rescue mission that is here. However, a lot of countries have offered aid and have been either not given an answer or told no by the Moroccan government. So I think that's confused a lot of governments and countries that are wanting to help, but have not been given the authorization to do so. So it's a bit unclear what are the reasons behind that, but I think, you know, at this point also, what is needed or what we're hearing that is needed is really sort of humanitarian relief, because I think at this point in most places, there isn't really an expectation of finding survivors under the rubble anymore.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder, in the absence of a more robust response from either the Moroccan government or having more international aid on the ground right now, what have you seen as to how locals and residents are responding to this moment and what they're doing?
Yeah, I mean, the solidarity shown by ordinary Moroccans has been astounding. We've seen, again, on these really twisty, turny, narrow mountain roads that are very difficult to navigate, hundreds of small cars packed full of blankets and milk and water and diapers, all of these supplies, making their way to these remote villages just out of a sense of an obligation to help.
I spoke to a 25-year-old woman named Hind Fatani, who is from Casablanca and had driven all the way down with several other volunteers just to bring supplies like milk, you know, dried food, water, etc. She told me, to the people who are coming here, I implore you to go to different areas from Marrakesh because people here have been given aid. So try to go farther in to the epicenter where the earthquake hit because people are suffering here. Everyone is dead here, and many haven't been pulled from under the rubble yet because there is a smell of death everywhere. People are really devastated. Don't bring anything else but medication and food. Food and medication. You know, I think there's just this feeling that everyone's really pulling together communities, you know, local communities, of course, neighbors helping neighbors. Someone told me on Sunday, you know, if there's a house that's half destroyed, they'll give whatever they have to the people whose house was fully destroyed. Mm-hmm. But there's also just Moroccans from all across the country coming to help to the extent that on these mountain roads, I mean, it's creating traffic jams. There are so many cars pouring into these villages. So I think that has been really remarkable to see. And, you know, this is a small anecdote, but we went to a large grocery store yesterday and we saw this couple just loading up their cart full of like salami and snacks and, you know, water bottles. And they had just decided they were just going to buy all of these things and then go take them to a place that needed them. So it's been really sort of heartwarming amid all the destruction to kind of see some of those scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, Claire, it seems like disasters like these in any part of the world can really reveal the underlying dynamic of a community or society. I mean, I saw that in Maui when there was a wildfire there and it was devastating, and similar scenes of, you know, the government wasn't immediately there and people coming together. But then also all the other underlying dynamics that made that tragedy what it was. And I'm wondering, in this moment, as you are on the ground in Morocco, if you're observing a similar dynamic, that this horrific earthquake is really showing the world what some of the underlying issues and strengths of this place were in this community.
This is a part of the country that is quite remote, but also neglected in terms of infrastructure and services. And so people really have to fend for themselves anyway. And I think that kind of mentality has really come to the fore and just made people jump into action to do whatever they can to help their neighbors, help their family members, help their community members, whether that is digging people out from under the rubble or, you know, just pitching these makeshift tents together and you know, sharing tea and biscuits and you know, advice. I think there's a lot of sort of ad hoc relief efforts being carried out by communities who are used to needing to fend for themselves. And I think that has been, you know, kind of the primary dynamic that we've observed here.
Claire, thank you for taking time to share all of this with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Claire Parker is the Cairo Bureau Chief for The Post. That's it for Post Reports. Thanks for listening. Today's show was produced by Emma Talkoff. It was edited by Maggie Penman and mixed by Sean Carter. Thank you to Jesse Messner-Hage. For the latest on this developing story, go to WashingtonPost.com. I'm Elahe Izadi. We'll be back tomorrow with more stories from The Washington Post.
The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. Support your healthy CoQ10 levels and blood pressure with two chews a day. Visit RadioBeats, BEETS.com, and save 15% with promo code DEAL.